If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
It was announced today that a play about Hillary Clinton will open on Broadway next year. And if it's anything like the real Hillary, it'll run for 30 years and never win anything.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to comic book artist Alex Ross. He also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Today, senators reviewed the FBI report on the allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, despite the fact that the FBI didn't actually conduct a serious investigation. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. When the allegations against Kavanaugh first surfaced, Trump's aides tried to restrain him, but to literally no one's surprise, that facade quickly unraveled. And in the last week or so, he's had one outburst after another.
If we brought George Washington here and we said, we have George Washington, the Democrats would vote against him. I'm a very famous person, unfortunately. This is so-and-so calling for... He took the call. Why is he taking a call from a Russian?
I'd like to turn to Judge Kavanaugh.
Excuse me. Go ahead,
just
please.
Just to wrap
please.
Up, can you promise
you know
to
what?
Release
you've really had
FBI's
enough.
Report?
Hey, you've had enough. I'm not a drinker. I can honestly say I never had a beer in my life. I've never had alcohol. I've just, you know, for whatever reason. Can you imagine if I had?
No. I honestly can't. You already scream and yell and slur your words like a stumbling drum. Even the way you stand is the way a drunk guy would stand if he was trying to pretend he wasn't drunk.
Okay. Just that cool. Arms to your side. Puff out your chest. No one will notice you're swaying back and forth. Oh my God, I'm gonna puke.
The president mocked and dismissed the allegations against Kavanaugh, so it's no wonder that the FBI investigation he requested wasn't actually a serious attempt to get at the truth. Today, for example, the FBI finally delivered its report, and if you're wondering how that's possible, it's because their investigation lasted less than a week. They delivered the report in under a week. I had to do a report on the Louisiana Purchase in sixth grade, and it took me a month. And I got a C. They didn't even interview Kavanaugh or Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. They really went over this thing with a no-toothed comb. And when they were investigating the other allegations against Kavanaugh, they made it clear they had no intention of actually talking to people who might have more information.
Deborah Ramirez, who talked to the FBI for 2 hours about her allegations of misconduct when they were at Yale. Ramirez's lawyer says his client provided a list of more than 20 witnesses who say they could corroborate her story. He says the FBI has not reached out to any of them.
Think about that. More than 20 people said they might have corroborating evidence, and the FBI talked to none of them. If the FBI worked like this on the X-Files, Mulder's landlord could have been an alien, and he never would have noticed. In fact, people who said they could corroborate the allegations against Kavanaugh actually tried to seek out the FBI themselves, and even then, they were ignored. One person who told The New Yorker I can corroborate Debbie's account reached out to the Bureau last weekend but did not hear back. Frustrated, he submitted a statement through an FBI web portal. No one should ever have to log on to the FBI's web portal. You shouldn't have to contact the FBI the same way I pay my dentist. In fact, no one should ever have to log on to anything that's still called a web portal. Would you like to report a crime to the FBI? Begin by logging on to the information superhighway and popping in your AOL CD-ROM. This investigation was obviously a sham, and sure enough, when the report finally came in today, Republican senators like Jeff Flake and Orrin Hatch were quick to claim that there was nothing new in it.
The Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley saying there's nothing we didn't already know and that there was no hint of misconduct. Senator Jeff Flake says he has seen, quote, no additional corroborating information against Judge Kavanaugh.
No corroboration, no confirmation of any of these outrageous accusations that have been made against him.
We have found nothing, absolutely nothing to corroborate accusations against him.
That's because you didn't look for it. You guys are like treasure hunters who decided to call it quits before you flipped over the map. This entire process has been a deeply revealing look at Senate Republicans. Trump, of course, has always been unhinged, but Republicans in the Senate like to pretend they were all the stable, above-it-all statesmen who were just putting up with his antics to get their judges and tax cuts. But over the last few weeks, many of them have lost their minds in Trumpian fashion. Just take South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Graham was once thought of as a Trump critic, but then during the Kavanaugh hearing, he exploded with rage.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham. God, I hate to say it, because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process? You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend.
He sounds like an outlaw gunslinger threatening to kill the Lone Ranger. But let's face it, if it came down to an Old West gunfight, Graham would be the guy hiding behind the pickle barrel with his fingers in his ears. He did the same thing yesterday when he was asked about the president viciously mocking Dr. Ford. This time, Graham was in front of an audience, and they booed him.
I don't like what the president said last night. I'm the first person to say, I want to hear from Dr. Ford. I thought she was handled respectfully. I thought Kavanaugh was treated like crap. Yeah, well, boo yourself.
Man, he's just fighting with the audience now. He's like the least threatening pro wrestler ever. My name's Lindsey, but you can call me the Southern Snake, and brother, I'm gonna bite your ankle. Well, boo right back at you. You're all a bunch of meanies. Graham has gone so far off the deep end that he even called for one of his colleagues, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, to apologize to Kavanaugh. You might remember these exchanges from the hearing last week in which a furious Kavanaugh tried to turn questions about his hard-drinking high school and college days back on the senators asking them.
I like
you
beer.
You haven't answered that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next one is...
Senator, what do you like
Judge...
to drink?
So you're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened?
That's you're asking about, yeah, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
I have no drinking problem, Judge.
Yeah, nor do I.
Ugh. We all knew this had in college, right? The guy who would get pulled over and the cop would say, do you know how fast you were going? And this guy would go, do you know how fast I was going? And then 20 years later, you get a LinkedIn request from him and he's the CEO of a dog poison company. The only way he could have looked crazier during that hearing is if he was wearing one of those beer guzzler helmets. Now, even Kavanaugh, as unhinged as he was, came back after the break and apologized to Klobuchar, who has written extensively about her father's alcoholism. And yet on Fox News this week, Graham said it was actually Klobuchar who owed Kavanaugh an apology.
Here's what I think. Amy Klobuchar should apologize to Judge Kavanaugh and his family for being part of a schmear campaign I haven't seen in over 20 years in politics.
Excuse me, did you say a schmear campaign? Were you hungry when you did that interview? Did you just come from the deli? This is a schmear campaign. And as for Hillary, we should lox her up. I've had enough of her capers. Boo! Oh, you didn't like my capers, dude? But that clip is such a perfect microcosm of this entire ordeal. Entitled powerful men think everyone else owes them an apology for having the audacity to hold them accountable for their actions. They think that being born to elite status in society means you earn that status, and they're furious at any attempt to take it away. That's why Trump keeps bringing up the fact that Kavanaugh went to Yale, although he doesn't always have his facts right.
You know, when he said that really what he was focused on was trying to be number one in his class at Yale, to me that was so believable. I understand college very well, and I understand being number one in your class, and I understand a lot of things.
I think he was number one in his class at Yale. He was number one in his law school at Yale. He was, I believe, number one at Yale. Is that a correct statement?
No, it's not. Yale College doesn't calculate class rank or standing, and neither does Yale Law School. And I have to say, as a favor, you should probably steer clear of asking, is that a correct statement, when you're talking. For one, we know you don't care what the answer is. And also, it would really slow down the momentum at your rallies. We've accomplished more than any administration ever. Is that a correct statement? It's not. What about the one before it? Not that either? Have any of them been correct? Not one? What about when I said it's great to be in West Virginia? This is Mississippi. Also, can we go back to this for a second?
I understand college very well.
I understand college very well. Sounds like something Jack Black would say in a movie about a bunch of middle-aged dudes who try to join a frat. I understand college, and if we're gonna fit in, we have to go to parties and scream at the top of our lungs.
I like beer.
What we are witnessing right now is a cultural struggle over how power works. There's a set of privileged people who are accustomed to being insulated from the consequences of their actions, and they want to keep it that way. That's why they set up such a sham process. No one who behaves the way Kavanaugh behaved during his testimony should be on the Supreme Court. And if you vote for him, you should...
boo yourself.
This has been A Closer Look. Guest is an Eisner Award-winning comic book artist. He's compiled his body of work for Marvel in the new book Marvelocity, which is available now. Please welcome to the show the very talented Alex Ross, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I have been in debt to you for a while. First of all, I was a fan of yours for a long time, and then I had a cartoon superhero show on Hulu, and I reached out to you and asked if you would do a painting of our cast, and here it is right here, and I'd just like to point out what an incredible job you did for us. So there I am. That's Kenan Thompson right there. That's Bill Hader up there. Rashida Jones, and this is one of the great pieces of art in my life. and my wife, yeah, give it up.
You didn't point out your brother.
No, my brother was there, too. Yeah, you're right. Good point. My brother is there. And
what did he think of it?
He loved it. He loved it. He's got great hair. I should have put my wife in it, and then she'd let me keep it at home.
Oh. So
you, obviously you used images of us to draw that, but, like, when you draw your superheroes, you actually have people model as the superheroes and take photos of them. Is that correct?
Yes. As with a lot of traditional illustration art, you use it. You know, you're basing it on life, and so I've had a number of friends over the years have posed for me, and I've built up a lot of photos of them that I'll refer back to, but most of the time, I'll just pose myself.
So if you need to paint Superman, you go and do a Superman pose and take a photo of it?
And then I'll paste another person's head on top of it.
Wow, gotcha. And so that seems to me a thing that if somebody walked in not knowing what you did for a living would be super weird.
Very weird.
Yes. But there's a realism to your work that you don't see in a lot of comic art. And the cover is so beautiful. There's Captain America there. But first of all, you know, obviously you have to decide who's going to be on the cover of it. So you split some hairs here. What did you start with Captain America and what made you decide to do more?
Well, 15 years ago, the author Chip Kidd and I did a book on my DC body of work, and Superman was on the cover, and I have a long connection to him. So I thought for the Marvel contrast, I love Captain America. I'd like to start with him, but there's so many other characters.
Yes.
Jump ahead.
Yeah, oh, here we go. I guess we can go, you did quite a few, so.
There's a million of these covers. And then if you keep going on the back end, it keeps going and going.
It's really very impressive.
Both sides. So you get this many different covers with the book.
You were not lazy with the creation of this book. I'm very impressed. One of my favorite things about this book is it really shows your progression as an artist. Here is your early Spider-Man work was a little less hyper-realistic. Is that fair to say? Here's your early Spider-Man. And I got to be honest, I would have thought that a kid who drew that would have had trouble drawing this, but there you go. That's just really amazing.
Well, you add 40 years.
And 40 years. Yeah. And what was it about realism that, what drew you to the idea of drawing these so realistic?
Well, my mother was an artist before me, and so I probably take some of her cues. And she grew up in the era of the 40s and 50s, where predominant illustrators like Norman Rockwell were the ones that, you know, were the greatest, the top of the heap. And so I idolized them and wanted to bring that kind of style to comics.
And obviously people have really enjoyed it. I do one other thing about your childhood that I was delighted by is you made a Fantastic Fours here. And obviously you made them with paper. Your choice for how to make her invisible is one of the great things. Is that just you use tape?
Oh, no, that's some kind of clear plastic.
Wow, it's really fantastic. Your attention to detail, even at that age, was really fantastic. You are not, obviously, we live in an era where a lot of people are doing excellent comic work, I should say, digitally. You are not digital at all. You're fully painting all of these.
No, I am functionally illiterate when it comes to computers.
I know this to be true because you don't even have an email address. It was very hard to get in touch with you.
Well, it's my wife's email.
Yeah.
So she'll write responses for me in terms of correspondence. Yeah.
I like that you asked, you like, I have to write back for Alex because right now he's taking a picture of himself posing like Superman.
It's usually true.
That's usually true. You have one of your many pieces of work that I am a fan of is Kingdom Come. Mm. And there's a minister character. This is a DC Universe story. There's a minister character that you said was based on your father.
Oh, yeah.
And he then became a bit of a minor celebrity in the comics world. Is that correct?
Well, he joined me. He and my mother would accompany me to some of the conventions I did back at the time of the book in the 90s. And when people would see him, they would recognize him because I drew the character to look exactly like him. And the beautiful thing about working your parent into your work is if you could drag your father, who often doesn't care about your weird thing, into your world and make that the inescapable for them. Now they're stopped because they are that character in a comic book.
That's so great. He's like, I didn't want to be in a comic book. But is it true that people have sometimes even asked him to sign the book?
Oh, yeah.
That's really wonderful. Oh. That's a great gift for a son to give his father.
And he turns 97 this month.
Wow. Well, congratulations to him. And congratulations on the books, Alex. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you.
Give it up. Alex Ross, everybody. Marvelocity, available now.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Alex Ross, the esteemed comic book artist. We were just talking about how you did such a fantastic job on your first talk show, but then you just mentioned right before we started taping, you did a pretend talk show in your garage?
Yeah, I wasn't the host of it. I was actually just one of the guests. It was actually part of the period of time where I used to have a big Halloween party amongst all my friends every year, and I did this for about 7 years. And so I set up a fake studio set with a big backdrop of New York City from big blow-ups of it, and actually the talk show host was the comic writer Brian Azzarello.
Wow.
So all during this whole party, they would bring up various people to be guests that were in costume at the party. I was one of them. I think I was Spider-Man that year.
Uh-huh.
And it was witty enough, and we filmed it, and we edited it down to a videotape I shared amongst some of the people attended it.
How did that go in comparison with tonight? Do you wish you would have been as Spider-Man? It would have been very interesting.
I'll take tonight over that.
Good. You were great. Something I'm always interested to ask comic artists and writers is how they've seen the world of comics kind of explode into popular culture. When you were starting to draw comics, we know that comics were not as big of a presence in film and television. What has it been like for you to see that happen?
Well, I think in some ways it's a vengeful return of comics over the Hollywood machine from holding it back from what was its rightful due. Because honestly, I'll give you a tiny bit of a history lesson here. Going back to the 1930s when the first comic strips that were so huge wound up being translated into movie serials, that happened within just a few years. It happened with Superman, it happened with Batman, and then
you get the conversion into television and whatnot, but ultimately, in the period where we've had the big budget blockbusters, from which we get Superman, the movie, it's taken another 30 years to get to the point where Marvel has gotten to do what, by all rights, they should have been able to do for decades. And so now that these films are given their due and they're as big as they are, I have to say, yeah, well, they had it coming. Mm-hmm. And they weren't getting that option before. Hollywood wasn't taking them seriously as content.
Mm-hmm. Do you like going out and seeing the big budget?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm mostly a big, strong supporter and fan of most of the stuff. And being a fan, there's the stuff you like and then the stuff you don't like. I have versions of characters I don't necessarily care for that they changed a costume or whatever the casting decision, but I'll still like the final product in many cases.
When you were out there with Seth, you were talking about how you would pose, how you do pose for superheroes at home in your studio. What does your studio look like?
It's one giant desk in the middle of a room that's filled with some display stuff, but mostly a lot of clutter. My wife is usually in there with me on the couch, we spend a majority of the time in my home cloistered in what winds up being the equivalent of a one-bedroom apartment in New York City.
And how often are you in there painting and working?
Well, pretty much 5 days a week. It used to be 7 days a week, but in the last 10 years, I finally switched over. For the first 20 years of my career, I was working 7 days a week.
Wow. And what were you working on? Are you drafting and redrafting, or always coming up with new pieces? How are your hours spent?
Well, the thing is, I built my career upon doing full stories.
Yeah.
And because I'm a painter, making painted comics, it's a weird thing because it's going to take longer. And that's why there's so few of them. Mm-hmm. Now, usually you have the job of comics being done by multiple hands. So penciler, inker, colorist. And a painter is going to be a one-shop guy, which means that's going to be a slower process. And I was probably as fast as you can likely be doing this, but it's all consuming. And so to get as much done as I wanted to for all the projects I've done over 30 years, I would really have to give my heart and soul over to it. So all of my free time.
Yeah. Well, you've built such an incredible body of work. It is so beautiful. It has been such a pleasure this reading through Marvelocity. It is going through the office quickly. Everyone's flipping through it. It is just stunning work. You'd be so proud of it. It's really fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And thank you for coming on the show. It's such a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.